morning, we're putting a call out to women with breast cancer or friends or family of women with breast cancer to participate in a program in which I think many of will be interested. We have Dr. Lisa Kaufman here to tell us more about it. Good morning, Dr. Kaufman.
Good morning.
Actually, listeners, you've heard us talk with Dr. Kaufman before. She's a professor of medicine at SUNY Upstate and an internist, but her special interest is in meditation and mind-body medicine. Dr. Kaufman's been with us before to talk about a number of her programs, and I actually want to back up before we talk about this new program. You were here, what, about a year ago to talk about a program that was breast cancer treatment and meditation. Tell me about your program. How did it go?
Well, that was a research project that was funded by the Baldwin Foundation to find out whether adding a meditation and mind-body medicine program to help people who are going through chemotherapy would make their time any easier, make it something that was really less physically draining, exhausting, and it's a hard thing to go through.
It is a hard thing to go through. Did you have enough participants in your program?
Well, we found that a lot of women just didn't feel up to taking on going to a program once a week for 8 weeks while they were also trying to go through their chemotherapy. And
yeah.
I think the whole thing was just a bit overwhelming.
I think it is. You know, when you're a patient of something like that, there's so much going on in your life and you're feeling so sick and so lousy. It's just hard to deal, isn't it?
Yeah. But we do want to let people know that those people who did come found it very useful.
They did. You know, I have to think this would translate to many other diseases beyond just breast cancer. I mean, what kinds of, there could be any number of treatments that if you have to go through them, understanding how to meditate and using that to your benefit could be huge.
Yeah, I think it's helpful no matter what kind of a chronic condition you have. It's been shown to be useful in many different sorts of diseases, particularly in heart disease and cancer, but a whole lot of other things. And really, I view it as a way to make the most out of life, to be able to be fully present, to really enjoy things, and also to be able to focus on what matters and not get worried or anxious or distracted, just to be able to focus on what needs to be done.
Life is a stressful thing. Just surviving is a stressful thing. To have to deal with disease at the same time is just that much more. And meditation is something that evens all of that out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes it possible to appreciate what's good and to be able to do what we need to make our health as good as possible.
So other times you've been here, we've talked about your mindful eating program, and I know that has been wildly successful. You've done very, very well with it. And so when I heard about this new program you have, which is a combination of breast cancer and mindful eating, I thought this could be very, very big. Speak to me about who the people participating in this program will be.
Well, this is a program that's not a research project. It's actually a service, and we applied for funds to the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation of Central New York, and they graciously gave us a grant to be able to offer the mindful eating program to people who are breast cancer survivors who are overweight. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they were interested in doing this is because there's a serious and fairly common complication of breast cancer treatment called lymphedema, which is where the arm on the side where the surgery was done becomes very swollen. It can be very unsightly. It's also very heavy, just carrying around this big swollen arm. And there's an increased risk of infection because there's all this fluid in there, and it makes a perfect culture medium for bacteria to move in.
So a woman has surgery on her breast, and her arm, what, swells up?
Yeah, it's because when they do the surgery, in order to be able to remove lymph nodes that might have cancer in them, they take the lymph nodes out. And when the lymph nodes are removed, they're part of the drainage system that gets fluid out of the arm.
I see.
And when people are heavier, the heavier you are, the more likely you are to get lymphedema. So it's very rare in slender women and very common in very heavy women.
So the women who would then participate in your mindful eating could alleviate the problem?
Yes, it's been shown that if people lose weight, the problem improves, mm-hmm. and that if people who are heavy lose weight who don't have it yet, they're less likely to get it in the future.
I see. So is this something you already know works? Is this something you assume will work? Has it been tested?
Well, we have two parts. We know that losing weight helps with lymphedema and helps to prevent it. We also know that the mindful eating approach can help people to lose weight without having to diet. Mm-hmm. And the absence of having to diet means that you can continue to do it because you're not in a treatment. Dieting is hard work. It's unpleasant. It's come to totally consume your whole relationship
with
food.
It's constricting.
Very much so.
Yes.
And it isn't fun. And people walk around in a state of deprivation and famine, and then they binge, which is understandable. So what we offer through the Mindful Eating Program is a whole new way of eating where people learn to recognize when they're hungry, which most chronic dieters don't do because they've been ignoring their hunger so long they no longer can tell when they're hungry unless they're absolutely famished.
Right.
And they also, once people know when they're hungry, we also help them to learn to eat only when they're hungry. Mm-hmm. And we help people to deal with emotional issues that so many people treat with food as a sort of anesthetic. We help them to deal with those in other ways that are less harmful to their body and ultimately more effective.
And I've got to think, if an overweight woman develops breast cancer and has surgery and typically deals with her emotions with food, then it's that much more tempting to be eating all of those horrible things when you're feeling sick and debilitated and you're not doing well anyway. And so the mindful eating, it strikes me as like a huge step toward getting beyond that.
Yeah, this program is not actually targeted at people who are having chemotherapy at the time because we've learned from our other work that they have enough on their mind. But this is for people who are survivors.
Okay.
And they can be at any stage in their illness, but we anticipate that most of them will be people who've had treatment.
I see.
Who are living their lives. And at this point, they may just be having to deal with the risk of lymphedema later, as well as the fact that most of us would like to be a size that's healthy.
Oh, well, that's true. How can people get in touch with you if they'd like to participate?
Well, we have several options. They can call our phone number, which is 464-5774, or they can go to our website, which is part of the Upstate website. So it's www.upstate.edu/stress, and then they can find a link to the program there.
Very good. And we will make sure we put links on our Health Link On Air website as well. Well, Dr. Lisa Kaufman, this has been great. Thanks so much. We'll ask you to come back in a few months to tell us about some of your successes.
Thank you very much, Tricia.
Hi. I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's checkup from the neck up. They all look alike to me. Or changing the world one smile at a time. Good morning, dear listeners. With Senator Obama running for president, there's a lot of discussion of race. Now, I'm a white Irish American who grew up in a middle-class, all-white suburb. It was a big deal in my high school when a girl with a white mom and a black dad enrolled. And even 40 years later, when I see someone of a different race, I notice our racial difference first and not the person's individuality, which I think I should notice first. But recently I read a very interesting experiment. Turns out, no matter what race we are, our brains lump people of other races into a broad category of different race initially. And we have trouble telling people of different races apart. Black people have trouble telling white people apart, while white people have trouble telling black people apart, etc. They really do look alike to us, whatever color us we are, because while our skin may look different, our brains work the same. Now, this may have been very useful eons ago when these basic Neanderthal parts of our brain were developed, whether you were a cave person in Africa, Europe, Asia. It was useful to notice and be wary of the unusual, because it could be dangerous. So, we avoid things we're unsure of, and we never get to know each other. But you know what helps with avoiding the unknown and different? Getting curious. Now, I'm doing a personal experiment. For example, the other day, I was walking to the hospital, and a dark-skinned woman in unusually colorful clothing was walking towards me. My brain noticed the differences first. Dark-skinned, unusual clothing. Then I saw her eyes were looking away and her face was as emotionless as mine. I felt little human connection, and I had a despairing thought like, how are we ever going to get over racism? But instead of being hard on myself for noticing race right off and looking away too, I got curious and looked just a tad longer. We made eye contact. I smiled and surprised. She smiled back, a real smile. Suddenly, we were two friendly, smiling people, more alike than different. A lovely, hopeful moment. And who knows? Maybe if we string enough of those moments together, we can make the world a friendlier, more colorful place for all of us. Because what we do after we see our differences is what really makes the difference. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.